number 013954, the United States against Travis.
Good morning. May it please the court. John Tice on behalf of the defendant appellant Christopher Travis. This case, I believe, presents a very troubling and not uncommon situation where an individual has been found to have committed an act which results in a finding of obstruction of justice, and whether that individual can still, notwithstanding that finding by the district court, gain the benefit of the sentencing guideline provision regarding acceptance of responsibility. It's our position that the district court and the government's position in this case, in essence, first of all, I disagree with the factual finding of the district court, but the court has the benefit of Judge Castillo's finding with regard to that. But I also believe that the suggestion by the government is an improper reading of the sentencing guidelines. And most importantly, I think in a broader picture, I think it encourages what I believe is a bad policy which goes contrary to what the sentencing guidelines are all about. What we have here is a situation where the defendant entered a guilty plea, and the court has seen his comments at the time of sentencing. The court has knows the history of the case with regard to what acts he had committed and what acts he admitted to. And I believe that if you read his comments, Mr. Travis was clearly accepting responsibility for his conduct, and in all ways, not only by simply by his plea of guilty, and we are certainly not taking the position that just by pleading guilty he should get the benefit of the acceptance of responsibility finding.
Then shouldn't get it just for saying I've caused a lot of havoc and I'm really sorry?
I suppose if that were all he had done, I would say that might not be, although there could be circumstances where maybe that would be if the court found that the comments of the individual were clearly sincere and the court made that finding.
Even when he was told to report and talk to the marshals and refused to report and continued to operate the scam and discounts the significance of his behavior and said he never received notice when the marshals had talked to him. I mean, shouldn't a judge take all of that into consideration?
I'd like to address that because the government has clearly spent the major part of their brief talking about those acts of the defendant, which in our, I believe the law is clear that the obstruction has to relate to the offense for which the defendant has pled guilty and is being sentenced. I don't know why the major part of the government's brief talks about that prior conduct, but that's not the conduct that the judge could have or should have used in determining whether the defendant had obstructed justice or whether he accepted responsibility. He failed to surrender himself. The facts are clear, although the reason for it is not as clear, on his prior case. I believe, Your Honor, that in fact is underlying all of the history of this case, is the history of the previous case. But the government's position when it came down to it at the district court as to the reason why the defendant obstructed justice and in fact was not entitled to acceptance of responsibility was based on the response to subpoenas regarding his conduct on the second case. And while I do believe that the court and the government were denying the defendant his acceptance responsibility because of the failure to surrender and because of the conduct relating to that earlier case, that is not, in fact, the reason given by the district court. The court spoke only of the language in the defendant's comments to the probation officer during the interview and then made some reference to, given all of them, and I apologize for not having the exact language, but basically Judge Castillo said something to the effect of, considered in light of all of the other factors or all of the other matters.
I think the court did rely, though, immediately on these on these comments to the probation people, isn't he?
Yes, and I think...
Why isn't that good enough? I mean, why do we have to go into this business of what happened with respect to the obstruction of justice in the other case and so forth? Is that, that may or may not be relevant to this question, but he seems to be relying on the defendant's reluctance to fess up to the probation people, I think.
Well, I would suggest that if you look at the language, and I think when you're dealing with months and years of an individual's liberty, I think that maybe we all put too much significance on an interview of that is done by the pre-sentence and by the probation officer doing a pre-sentence investigation, sitting down and talking to someone. Anyone, I think it's only human nature, a person is going to try to explain their conduct. And I believe that that was what Mr. Travis was asked to do, was explain how did you get into this situation. I'm troubled even by the language of some of the opinions of this court with regard to where they were individuals' comments at sentencing, where they are asked to be candid and honest and explain their behavior, and then that those comments are used against them as saying, oh, see, you're instead of saying, I'm a bad person, I did a bad thing, you explained how you got into that situation. I'm very troubled by that in because we encourage or should encourage insight or candor by individual criminal defendants into how they how their behavior brought themselves before the court. And yet,
isn't that an area, though, where the trial judge has got a lot of discretion to evaluate what the defendant meant by the comments he made to the various people?
Absolutely. But there are standards that the trial judge does have to meet, and I believe that the record that the court made in this case, based on his sort of very short comment with regard to the comments to the probation officer, I don't believe that the court made a sufficient record to support the finding of either of the obstruction of justice or the denial of the acceptance of responsibility. Whenever this happened, and I realize that the sentencing guidelines are written in such a way that it does create what I believe would be a intolerable conflict between the interest in having individuals plead guilty and accept responsibility for their actions, and if the government's position, and in fact the position of the district court in this case, were upheld, once an individual had, for example, in this case, provided inadequate documents, then there is no benefit in entering a guilty plea. It encourages trials. It encourages people to go to the wall and say, we're not going to admit anything or disagree with anything because no matter what, I'm going to get those extra points. I would suggest that at many times during the course of this process, Mr. Travis had the opportunity to either fight or accept responsibility and admit guilt. On each one of those, he did accept responsibility. He didn't fight the amounts at the time of sentencing. He didn't disagree with many of the issues here, and in fact gave a sincere explanation and apology for his actions. And I would ask the court to remand the case for the Judge Castillo to have the opportunity to correct the error with regard to the finding on acceptance and responsibility. If the court has no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tice.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Mr. Huff.
May it please the court, counsel. Judge Castillo was correct and definitely not clearly erroneous in determining that the defendant had not met his burden to show that this was one of those exceptional cases in which both an adjustment upwards for obstruction of justice and an adjustment downwards for acceptance of responsibility.
It's a little hard in this case to see the relationship between those two things because they're separated in time and circumstance here by a lot of other events. But you know, there may be other reasons for denying the acceptance of responsibility, but I have difficulty seeing how it it's much supported by the obstruction of justice finding.
Well, I think that the basis for not allowing both obstruction and acceptance in the same case goes to the determination that a court has to make whether a person has truly accepted responsibility. And typically when a person is obstructing justice, as defendant did in this case, and has not appealed that decision to this court, that shows, that gives the trial court a view, a window into that defendant's mind state. And you've seen in the sentencing transcript that Judge Castillo asked me, well, isn't it now that I should really be focusing at and not what happened a couple of years ago? And that's absolutely correct. However, what happened back then is going to inform the judge as to what this defendant is doing now and what he did over the whole course of the time between the time that he obstructed justice and the time that he was sentenced. I pointed to that, and the judge used those reasons for denying the acceptance of responsibility. It wasn't just the obstruction of justice. He subsequently started this new fraud at the very same time that he was supposedly sincerely accepting responsibility in the prior case before Judge Castillo. He was conducting another fraud. That informs Judge Castillo's decision on whether or not when Chris Travis says to him this time, you know, I'm sincerely sorry, whether he's telling the truth. In addition, as Judge Rovner pointed out, he failed to appear on several different occasions when the marshals contacted him, and this wasn't a situation where he voluntarily turned himself in. He had to be nabbed by some folks out in Los Angeles. This was a relatively grudgingly accepted plea agreement by Mr. Travis. He didn't accept, this wasn't a blind plea. He actually did get a benefit from pleading in this case to only two counts of the indictment, which was an 11-count indictment, because that capped him at 10 years. That gave him an incentive to plea. His guidelines, as calculated by the government, were much higher than the 10 years. In addition, as the court has already pointed out, his statements to the probation office really did not show that he was accepting responsibility for what he did. He continued to put it off on other people. If these people hadn't bounced checks to me, I wouldn't have done any of this. Nothing showed a sincere remorse in this case. And I would suggest that even if there was not the obstruction of justice and therefore things weren't against him as far as having to show an exceptional case, this would not be a case where he should be granted acceptance of responsibility because he just hasn't shown that. For those reasons, we would ask that the Judge Castillo, the district court's decision on the sentencing be upheld.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Huff. Mr. Tice? 1 minute and 20 seconds.
I won't even take the whole thing. I just wanted to make one comment. We have not appealed the finding of obstruction, although I think in the range of obstructions, this is one. The court would have had to have made, had he not agreed to that, finding that the documents were provided a material false statement to a law enforcement officer that significantly obstructed or impeded the official investigation or prosecution. But I think that's consistent with the defendant's position that he has not, that he has accepted responsibility. He did not fight that, and he, in fact, has not appealed that, only the finding with regard to the acceptance. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Tice, you also served by appointment to this court, and you have the deep thanks of the court for the fine job you did on behalf of your client.
Thank you.